Welcome to Yacht Crew Vlogs, where we tell the stories of those in the yachting industry. A behind-the-scenes look that discovers the individuals in the industry, their history, their passions, and what inspires them to do what they do.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest, Chris Coleman, a man who I've been trying to track down for some time, and I finally got the privilege to get him on screen. He works with Technocraft. How are you, Chris?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thanks for blessing me with your presence.
It's no problem. You've only been asking me for 3 years or something.
Yeah. You're a hard man to track down. Off. Well, I don't think you like the camera very much, but and you're generally quite a quiet guy anyway. So it is absolutely my pleasure to have you here. I've known you for quite some time, probably, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, probably near 15, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me what brought you to Mallorca and, just give us a little bit of a backstory on Chris Coleman.
Well, my wife and I originally were working in London and decided after the birth of our first child that we didn't want to stay in London and have that life of lots of commuting and not really seeing your family. So we decided to come to Mallorca and start our own little business and have a new life completely. It's quite a weird coincidence, but literally the two girls that worked for the estate agent that we bought a bar off, we became very close friends with, and their husbands actually at the time were the two guys that owned and run Technocraft. So I met the two guys that owned Technocraft within the first few weeks of being on the island. And after a while, he approached me and asked me if I would come and help them out. The directors of the company were pushing to build a company that was going forward. It was very small at the time. It was only about 10 or 12 of them. And they were looking for people that could take it much bigger because the opportunities in the market at the time were very obvious for everybody to see.
Well, what is it exactly, for the viewers out there that aren't aware, what is Technocraft?
Basically we provide the scale, well, in a refit process of a boat, whether it's being painted or having teak replaced or any of the general refit exterior parts of the boat, we provide the scaffold to give access to whoever's working, whether it's the painters, the carpenters, the electricians, or whatever. We give them access to the areas. And we also cover the scaffold in a heat shrunk plastic, so we provide basically an individual workshop around each vessel for exactly the requirements that they need to do whatever refit it is that they're doing.
And is this any size yacht, from like little boats all the way up to super yachts?
Yeah, basically, originally when we started, we were based in Palma, just in Palma, and we were very much bailing a lot of the 30, 40, up to 50 meter boats on the hard. Now we've done the two biggest in the world. So there's nothing. The point of where we're at now is I think there's something like 90 yachts over 100 meters, and we've done 40% of them.
Oh. And that grew just, how many years ago was that then, that you started?
It was 2006 when I first got approached to come and work for the company. And in 2008, I think I was made the general manager. And after that, it's just grown exponentially. We had a merger with the Rolling Stock and Pinmar Groups merged the Pinmar scaffold and the Technocraft scaffold, which helped us, gave us the ability to size up considerably because our manpower doubled overnight, and from that we went on to be able to take the bigger boats. We've now got offices in Palma, Barcelona and La Ciotat, and we work all over Europe. This year alone I've been in Damen in Holland, Vitters in Holland, Ocean Co in Holland. We've been in two places in Germany. We very often work in Cartagena, in the Navantia shipyard there. Also in the last 10 years we've been all over. I've personally been to New Zealand to assist a client over there. We've done jobs in Thailand, and we have had people working in the United States. Last year I had one or two guys there for the best part of a year. So it's become a very global thing now, and you know, there's many other companies that people have left us and set up and are carrying on, taking on the smaller boats. Most of the majority of our business is now the larger stuff of 60, 70 metres and above. And this last I looked, our peak at this winter, I think we had 70 staff working for Technicraft, and we've got a couple of subcontractors which we can also take on, so we can up our numbers to about 120. We were the first two companies which merged together. We were the first people in this business in Europe, and you know, definitely with the backing of our parent company of Pinmar and Global Yacht Group, we definitely pushing for the bigger side of the market. The big boats are what we're looking for. And, you know, these things now have become all about how quickly you can get them up, how safe they can get up. It's all about how fast and how quick you can do it. So we have to hit jobs in numbers. You know, we've got 140 metre sail. We are a motor yacht in France at the moment. It's one of the biggest yachts in the world. And, you know, we put the whole hull of that up in scaffold plastic ready to go in under 2 weeks.
Well, as we're seeing right now, I mean, the order books are full straight across Europe. You know, one of the number ones, of course, is Dutch built. But are you finding, because they are getting bigger and bigger, are there many companies that do what you do when it comes to these mega yachts that are being built?
No, there's not many people. This is the best bit for us. The large side of the things, we haven't got an awful lot. The competition dwindles because there's nobody that can really turn up. I mean, we've got a job in Germany at the moment from scratch. When I leave there, it's 50 trucks of material. We had to put it up with 40 guys in 3.5 weeks. We had to have the material delivered. We have to build it. It's like it's a military operation. You know, we have deadlines to hit. We have to make sure if we say we can do it in 15 days, we do it in 15 days. Because by that time, the next company, the painters, has got 100 painters arriving. And they've booked all their hotels and their flights. We have to be ready for. Just the organisation of getting 50 trucks of material out put somewhere else ready for the next job or stored is challenging enough.
Well, what's your position in the company? Like, what is your?
I'm now role? Well, Technicraft is part of Global Yacht Group. You know, I'm a department within this group. Pinmar is the paint company that we work with alongside and for. Not my only client, but obviously it's a massive part of my business, seeing as they own us. And I am the general manager of Technicraft. I run everything from the top down. I report straight to the board. We are a PLC on the London Stock Exchange company. And I report to the board of directors directly. And I'm responsible for everything from here on downwards.
You first got into the company, you'd never done anything like this before. So you have literally learned this from the ground up.
I have a degree in basically event management, so I've got the organizational skills. But I didn't. I came in as an organizer to plan, schedule, and organize and make stuff happen. Yeah.
And so when somebody comes to you with an issue, I mean, you know exactly how to solve it because you're not one of these guys that, you know, inherited a company from your father or, you know, had a lot of money and bought into a company. You actually worked your way up from, you know, the guy that was picking up stuff on a truck all the way up.
Well, I have done every job from the bottom in the process of learning what we do. And I have I have been there and I have done it all. We've also done all the courses for the health and safety and the scaffolding. So we do know how to do it properly. There's no corners cut in our business. We're very, very professional. Everybody has to have the full training and experience and supervision, and we've got a very, very solid structure. I've got a very experienced team that I've brought along with me. Everybody knows what they're doing all the way down. When it's like this, we have it's organization is everything. It's from the men. Materials and everything that goes with it. It's nothing, you know, mistakes can't happen. So you have to be very meticulous and thorough.
Let me ask you, I mean, we know that there's like a large amount of shipyards within Europe, but on the other hand,
there's not actually.
Well, A lot of the massive super yachts being built are being built.
This is the new build, but we're the reef. Well, we do new builds as well, but the refit business is the biggest part of our industry. And the problem is space. It's very difficult for some of the shipyards. They're queuing up to do their refits. And some of the big ones, we've got one particular client, they book, there's one shipyard, it's one owner, he's got multiple boats, and they book the shipyard every winter just for his fleet. Because space is prime. There are not enough covered dry docks in Northern Europe, enough dry docks in Northern Europe, enough synchro lifts to be able to do this business. All of these shipyards are full. And they're full because there's not enough space. STP is always struggling to get more people in Palma. There's always people queuing up to get in. It's becoming... they're building so many of these new builds, which is true. All the shipyards that are building new builds are full, flat out churning out boats and boats. But there's no new provision for the refit business. So this is why we're always getting pushed to make our products. We're having everybody, not just me, but the paint side of it. It's always about... we're having to do the refits as quick as possible because they're limited times in the shipyards and they also want the boat back in the water as fast as possible. We're also having to modify techniques and innovate as much as possible to speed things up, finding ways of perhaps building the scaffold before some of the scaffold before the boat arrives, so they park it in half ready built, anything we can do to speed things up.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, the U.S. is the largest segment of ownership in the super yacht industry, percentage wise. And when you take a look at the amount of millionaires, I mean, there are more millionaires in the US than there are, you know, in Europe and Asia combined. What type of refit and shipbuilding facilities are in the States? Do they do what some of these Northern Europe shipyards do?
Yeah, I mean, I've spent some time in the States looking, and we have a paint department over there. There's no scaffold department as of yet. But I've been over there, but their shipyards, the refit side, they are not as professional, up-to-date, state-of-the-art, call it what you like, I'd be careful not to upset anybody, as some of the places in Europe. I mean, every shipyard we're in, MB92 in Barcelona 2 years ago, spent millions putting in a new synchro lift to be able to take the MB92 in La Ciotat again is doing another thing. They've got a massive synchro lift that should be ready in the next year. STP in Palma is always trying to expand and get bigger. Bought another travel lift that was only 2 or 3 years ago to be able to take bigger boats out of the water. So all of these places we're working in, the refit industry, they're always trying to, they're incredibly up to date and professional. I know that Savannah's got a new shipyard which is working along those lines, but some of the other ones they could do with some TLC.
because that's one of the things with throughout the pandemic, of course. You know, a lot of these ships didn't make any crossings, right? So when it came to their refits, and especially, you know, when everything was locked down and nobody could use their yachts because there was that law in place for a little bit of time as well, that would have been the ideal time for these boats to have refits.
Yeah. In Europe, we picked up quite a lot of business and people just realized they weren't going to be able to use their boats for a good 12 months. So they might as well do these things now. I mean, the beauty of our business is that these great big lumps of steel sit in salt water and sun. So they do need painting on a sort of 5 to 7 year cycle. And some of them, if they're really well looked after, maybe 10. But there is a repeating, recurring business, which is always good. The whole industry is growing. And a lot of the shipyards were even from the 70s or 80s or even before that. They need to be, a lot of them need to be, we need to keep up and need to develop to be able to give everybody space to work. Boats are bigger. There's a lot of boats. I mean, even from my experience, there was hardly anything. 70 metres used to be massive. Yeah. 70 metres now is two a penny.
And that's that is one thing. I mean, you know, I had an interview the other day with Peter from Ocean Independence, and we were talking about the fact that, we've seen the super yacht industry go through sort of trends, as it were, for a while there, it was about getting longer and longer and longer. And then all of a sudden we saw this trend that started where they were getting smaller, but they were turning into expedition yachts, excursion yachts. But I think once again, what you're seeing is that we are seeing the billionaires trying to outdo each other on length.
Yes, length. Yeah, definitely. Length or unusual features or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the longer it is, the more unusual features you can pack into it, right?
Yeah, there's a nice size where you get to about 75 meters where they actually, the walkways become comfortable and big, and there's space on them. The smaller ones, you know, everything has to be crammed in. You know, every chair's got a hatch underneath it. You get to a certain size where they don't need that. They've got the space on them. The gross tonnages get bigger and bigger, and then they become massive. But then you have to avoid trying to look like someone. They look a bit like cruise ships.
They are, because I mean, I've seen some of that. You know, I do a lot of research. Not that I've been on any of them. Trust me, I would love to be, but someone's got to invite me. To the viewers out there, but they literally are the size of small cruise ships. I mean, you see the Ritz-Carlton, for example, now is, you know, having yachts built for these, you know, special experiences, but they are about the same size of some of those individually owner yachts out there.
Yes. Yep.
It's phenomenal. They've got elevators and dance floors and, you know, three swimming pools and two helicopter pads. And I mean, there is no way. What I don't understand about that is, like, you know, you have to stay out in the ocean with these yachts wherever you go, because there's really nowhere that you can, you know, you can't just go into the nearest cove and hang, right?
No, this is it. They're also running out of places where they can dock up.
Yeah.
I can't comment on any of the things you just said anyway, obviously, because my NDAs don't allow me to, about the dance floors and the...
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, it's quite amazing to see these yachts are getting bigger and bigger. And it's, you know, it's interesting. And they're also changing the style of yacht, too. I mean, they are looking more towards a lot of environmentally friendly things that go with them, too, to a certain degree.
Well, of course, yeah. A little bit, well, if you, yachts, any yacht isn't particularly environmentally friendly. So anything they can do to help improve that it's got to be better, and the shape is changing. I mean, a lot of the bow shape keeps changing. Now everybody seems to be going for a very axe pointy bow, whereas 10 years ago they were big sweeping golfy bows. So these things are all made to order, so it's the owners that are pushing for a lot of the what they want is proper practical space rather than being cramped, I guess. And to do that, you have to have the bigger yacht.
That must be doing your job. I mean, that's like coding a mountain in scaffolding.
Yeah, I mean, well, a 140-meter yacht takes 500 tons. It's, you know, we're permanently changing and trying, and we're moving into Northern Europe more and more. And we have, in the Mediterranean, we've always used a plastic roof, a plastic cover, building our scaffold. And you can take the conditions over there. But when we moved to La Ciotat, we had to change the wind up that comes through La Ciotat. It gets the Mistral and it's very strong. It's probably one of the strongest consistent winds we get in anywhere we work, even more so than Holland or Germany. And we had to reinforce and strengthen and come up with new ways to keep the plastic on. Up there because the winds are just harsher. And then we've moved up to Northern Europe and we're now experimenting with putting metal roofs on these tents, which is even more like a proper warehouse. The one that I've got in Germany at the moment is 140 meter. That's got a full metal roof on it. It's about adapting to the, as things get bigger and shapes and sizes, and the paint techniques are always permanently changing, so the conditions they want in the tents are always permanently changing. And we have to listen and work very closely with our paint team to how they want what they want, what access they want. Just for example, a metallic paint job, they need more space, so we have to put more scaffold, give more distance. So it's a very harmonious relationship we have working with the painters to try and, at the end of the day, nobody's paying for to scaffold the boat, they're paying to paint the boat. So we have to give the painters their best environment. And that's a key factor in what we do and what we push for. Is a lot of the nobody else worked quite the way we do, where we've got our own in-house paint company and scaffold company. All the others put companies working together, separate companies, but working together. So we find that we push, because we work very closely with all the paint managers. And if they've got a problem, then we try and find a solution to give them a better, whether it's a better seal or a drier tent or better accesses or whatever. We're trying all the time to produce the perfect facility, which on a very, very curvy super yacht isn't always very easy, because at the end of the day, scaffold square and boats around.
It's interesting because, you know, I don't think that a lot of people think about the secondary steps that go into the different, you know, sort of the upkeep of yachts. You know, we see this beautiful yacht in the pictures, or we go down to the dock and we see these beautiful yachts floating serenely through the water, or sometimes not so serenely. But we don't think, you know, we know that they need to be painted, but we just envision painters. We don't think about the fact that there's got to be scaffolding put up and that there's got to be the protection put up. And, you know, and it goes on and on and on. There's so many people that this industry, and just even one yacht, so many people that this industry impacts.
Yes. Yeah, it employs a lot of people. It's a lot of people are living. Yeah. And it's not just the painters. You've got the infrastructure of people are putting in the electricity, the lights, the air, the extraction systems. And, you know, I use this analogy, but everybody knows that if you take your car for a complete repaint, they take the doors off and they paint them over there, and they take the lights out and they paint the hull, and then they shut the shell of the car and put it all back together. Well, that's what we do with a boat as well. Every piece of that boat has to come off and be painted and put back on as well. So that's a whole other industry within this. All the deckheads, all the doors, all the hatches, lockers, all the lights, everything all has to come off when they paint these boats.
Well, I mean, you know, just imagining that's a big job for a car. You know, I can't imagine a 140-meter yacht. Like, how long does that usually take?
Well, we have a team that does that as well under the Technoprof brand, which I started about 10 years ago. They're not all boats the same, obviously, but, you know, we strip a boat in about 2 weeks, and then we take it back to the Navy and we clean all the pieces up and pass the painted pieces over to the painters, and then they paint them, they give them back to us. We rebuild them all, because everything has to be broken down. All the lights took out, the deck heads and speakers took and everything out, and then we put them back together. And then if you take a door, for example, it's not just a door, because it's got three hinges, it's got two handles, a lock, a hook to hold it open, and all that has to come off. We clean it, put it back on as new. And then that all has to be put back on the vessel as soon as the painting's finished, just before the scaffold comes down. So we have to do that in very fast time. There's been some night shifts on those jobs.
Oh, I can imagine. So we're talking months here. This isn't something that can be done overnight.
No.
Well,
you'd have to give it the manpower it needs. You know, we try and put the boats back, you know. Well, we have 6 months. And people, you know, we have on a big boat, we'll spend 3 to 4 weeks putting the scaffold up. And then, and in that time, the pieces we took off, the painters will then go on and have 3.5 months to paint the boat. And then there's a month to put the pieces back on, and then the 2 weeks to take the scaffold back down. It's not, they haven't got 6 months to paint the boat. It's in a 6 month project, because of all the other ancillary projects.
And this has to be done every 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we're doing some boats for the third time around now.
And let me ask you, I mean, we all know that, well, I mean, the saying is that when you have a super yacht, 10% of that cost is your yearly cost. So if you've got a $5 billion yacht, then 10% of that is what it costs you to keep that boat going. That doesn't include refits.
I would imagine it does.
Yeah.
Because it's just a thrown around number anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would imagine that you probably put another 10% or no, sorry, probably 20. You probably put 20% of that figure away each year, and that would cover for your refit.
Wow. Well, you know what? I mean, most of the people that own these yachts, they have that kind of, I mean, you wouldn't buy a yacht or have a yacht built if you didn't have that kind of money to keep it up anyway.
No.
But that is astronomical. No. And when you talk about that kind of money too, you know, you think about the person that's paying it, but also think about who's earning it. because how many people are earning that money that's being paid for that job to be done?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely food for thought. Yeah.
Well, Chris, I know you're a busy man, and I want to say thank you ever so much for your time, finally.
Okay.
I knew what you did, and you know, I had done the research. I was familiar with Technocraft, but I didn't really know the ins and outs. And in speaking to your wife over the years, it was, you know, scaffolding. That was pretty much the extent of that, right?
Yeah, as far as scaffold goes, I mean, there are normal scaffolders, there are oil rig scaffolders, and there are people that do the top of the revolving towers in Toronto or whatever. Yeah. And there's us. We're the elite scaffolders. It's not, you can't quite compare it to the local guys knocking up a two-story building around the court. It's a little bit different. I mean, we do so much of a lot of our scaffold is with the boats are in the water, where we put all the scaffold on the boat and hang it off the boat. We are pretty much the only people that can do that in Europe that I've come across at any size. There's maybe one other company that can do that. That's a whole different thing, which means that the boats don't have to come out, which is probably because we were talking what we said earlier about the lack of space in docks. It solves a problem. We've done several boats all over Europe, including we had a new build boat that was based in Bremerhaven that was up for nine and a half months straight through a whole winter with a scaffold on it and plastic cover, and took the whole of a German winter without any problem. This does be able to scaffold the boat. With the scaffold on the boat, does solve the problem if they cannot find anywhere to come out of the water. There's another thing that we've really pushed on. We have to push on because the clients, we can't do the work if we can't find somewhere for them to go.
Well, and I mean, that's just going to become an ever increasing problem as we see, you know, these boats starting to come out of the build yards very, very rapidly. Yep. Lately. And there's more and more of them being built. So if we're having issues now, can you imagine 5 years from now?
Yeah, I can only imagine it getting worse. Somebody needs, these millionaires need to invest in shipyards, not ships.
Yeah, crazy, crazy. Chris, thank you for your time. It's very much appreciated.
Okay, it's nice to speak to you.
You as well. You have been listening to Chris Coleman. He is the director, managing director, correct?
No, just general manager.
General manager over at Technocraft. Will provide all of his details below this interview when it airs for Chris via LinkedIn and, of course, the websites and everything else for Technocraft if you would like to do some investigating of your own. You've been watching another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.